trying to adjust my glasses. What is happening, PGA DFS fans? We bring you in some nice classical note. I guess it's really warranted given we had a classical winner last week at the PGA Championship, Ben. We'll get into that and so much more, but it is the Charles Schwab Challenge. So PGA Tour heads back to Dallas for a week before we start getting into the U.S. Open, and I should say open time of the year with the Open Championship and U.S. Open just around the corner. And of course, I want to thank our friends at Monkey Knife Fight for the continued sponsorship here of the show. And of course, there's some great things going on. It's player props based contest. And last week, the line was set at 12 and a half birdies. That's one of the contests there that Ben, I'll go into in just a little bit. But in case you guys haven't heard of Monkey Knife Fight, they have all different sports available for those player props based contests I just mentioned. NBA, UFC, PGA, esports, soccer, and of course, NFL coming up soon. So head on over to monkeyknifefight.com and use promo code OSMO with your first deposit. You're going to get a match up to $100. So pretty good deal there. And Ben, last week it was 12 and a half birdies was the line. And you and I said, well, for most golfers in the field, that should be attainable. And for most of the big names that made the cut, it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very difficult course, but it wasn't difficult in the sense that you couldn't make birdies. It was just difficult to hold it together on some of the non-scoring holes, the par threes and whatnot. So fascinating. We could do a whole show on what transpired. It was good. Entertaining, different, not what I thought. And even seeing the leaderboard, it was weird because a theme didn't jump out per se. And I like Kiwa Island a lot. I was entertained by it, but man, was it a difficult test.
It was a difficult test on one front. And of course, when Phil Mickelson comes and wins,
well, that doesn't help.
Difficult to handicap as well, right? Not going to lie. It was not the best. I had for myself a FanDuel line that I was so mad at Patrick Reed. And this was my note to you that I was so mad at him on Friday morning, basically after his round. I'm like, it was the worst round I had seen him play. I wrote him off and ended up being the second best person in my lineup. We'll certainly get into that and see if that was maybe he found form or a product of good weather. We'll get into that. But before we do all that, I want to talk about this week's Monkey Knife Fight prop bet of the week. It is 16 and a half birdies, Ben. Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Daniel Berger, couple of names. So for that prop, do you like the over or do you think that Colonial will prove to be a difficult test this week?
So certainly, you know, if you think a guy is going to really be up there, I think they can attain that. But I'm going to go the other way. You only got two par fives. It's not that Colonial is going to be brutally difficult, but if the wind is up a little, this is a tree line course. I don't think there'll be as many. You know, par 70 makes a difference. So guys will go low. It's not going to be, you know, crazy carnage, but I don't know if we see a ton of birdies from the field this week.
Yeah, it certainly does play harder. And this is a good lead in as well to the third topic that we'll talk about, of course, which is the golf course Colonial and a little bit of that. For me, I think if you're trying to fade somebody this week, I really like going to the prop here of under 16 and a half birdies. If you think that the run of Jordan Spieth is done of coming in the top 10 here, or even say that Justin Thomas is just out of form and maybe he's trending towards another miscut, this is a great way to fade them. If you don't want to say going to the matchup side on the other way to fade them. So definitely like that. Now let's talk about the golf world for a little bit before we go into the Charles Schwab Challenge. What has taken the world by storm in terms of the golf world the last 24 hours is not the oldest major champion in history. No, it's the fight between Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau. A leaked video, of course, has come out. I'm sure most of the people listening to the show have heard about it. Maybe you've had a chance to dissect it. For me, it's just anything that I can get about it, I want to hear about it. I think it brings in a whole new element to the PGA Tour, brings in a whole new set of fan base. And of course, a little bit of drama never hurts the ratings. So Ben, of it, I know that maybe we haven't been the biggest Brooks fan because he's kind of, you know, a little bit of only shows up in big events kind of thing. Whose side do you like here? And do you think that the eye roll to death from Koepka to DeChambeau is warranted in this sense?
So I loved everything about it. I definitely like Brooks a lot more for doing this. It was genuine. That was my favorite part about it. You could
it was genuine for sure.
Completely genuine. My biggest problem with it, before I dive into this, I want to go on a little tangent.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't do like crazy data, but it is clear to me that what Bryson said, a lot of people are saying, what did Bryson say? He was talking about his drive and his shot on 18. I think if you have good headphones and you really break that down, that is what he was saying. I've seen some people say that he said something about like, you got to line your putts to Brooks. There's no chance that he was talking in response to Brooks there, but nevertheless, hilarious. I'm definitely team Brooks in this situation. Not that Bryson did anything like wrong. I just think it's hilarious that Brooks has this attitude toward Bryson.
Yeah. Now I will say there was a couple things. Bryson walking in the interview shot
with the spikes.
Koepka hates whenever Bryson's around. That's clear. But Bryson walking through the interview shoot, that was pretty great too. That obviously with the metal spikes that obviously pissed off Koepka pretty bad. Now, whether he was saying something to Brooks or not, regardless, Brooks was pretty pissed off that DeChambeau was saying something in the middle of his interview. And it seems like DeChambeau probably did it on purpose. Like you said, he probably wasn't saying something to Brooks, but certainly loud enough that it was impeding Brooks's interview. So I love it. I hope that the United States Golf Association, which is not the PGA Tour, decides to put these two together on Thursday and Friday at the U.S. Open and Torrey Pines coming up in a couple weeks. And if not, I think the entire world, maybe even more than the golf world, wants to see these guys go at it on Sunday afternoon at the U.S. Open. So I hope we get that. Any other comments on that, Ben, or seen any chats in our chats that have some good takes?
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, any just like most things in life, eyeballs, views, debate.
Sorry, my fault. My bad.
I was going to say, what did you do? No, anytime
I pressed the wrong button.
You said it at the top. Anytime you get drama, it brings casuals into the sport, and I think that's great. I hope we capitalize it as a sport. I just hope it's genuine, though. I don't like the forced narratives, and that's why I like this, because Brooks and Bryson seem to not like each other, and that creates great drama.
That's totally okay, right?
And there's nothing wrong with that.
So, I did have a Freudian slip, by the way, just there. So thank you for that. A nice little lead in. Thank you for the super chat there, sir. And joining us, of course, live. Appreciate that as always. So as we move on from the Bryson and Brooks talk, which I really do hope it heats up, they're going to be teeing off against each other and even maybe on the same team here coming up in a couple months. Be the ultimate cop out to see one of them withdraw from the Ryder Cup. That would just be kind of the checkmate in that game, if you will. But this week we head to Colonial and we've got a ton of information on it. It has been the Jordan Spieth challenge, not the Charles Schwab challenge in years past. He's the top price guy. So any notes on Colonial that you want to bring up that you think people should know, other than it's a par 70 and plays a little over par? And then you can go right into talking about the top of the leaderboard, or the top of the pricing board, I should say. And if you're at all excited to play the top priced golfer in Jordan Spieth, because I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not super. The great thing about Colonial is we see it every year and we know what to expect. This tournament changes sponsors like every two. This tournament is a random number generator in terms of the sponsor, but the course stays the same. And that part is great. Tree lined, it reminds me of Harbortown a lot. You get some winners that have a theme here. And there's a reason that Jordan Spieth, you know, I mean, he's obviously a world-class player, so he can win anywhere. But when you think about courses, this does fit his game. Now, I was a little surprised that he was 11-2. That's really putting a premium on that course history, I'm not going to lie. But this is just a classic, you know, you got to make some putts. You want to lean on your irons. Off the tee is not important, but I will say I don't think that bombers are just written off. You can be aggressive in spots. It's just definitely more of a technical second shot course.
It sure is. And a lot of people miss the fairways to begin with here. So somebody like Jordan, right, that obviously struggles to hit the fairways to begin with, he's kind of goes with the field here. The field doesn't really gain that much percentage in terms of driving accuracy here. So probably another little bit of reason that why Jordan does play well here. But I got to ask you, can you recall a time recently that a golfer above 11,000 was a part of the winning lineup or even a part of the optimal lineup? Because for me, it's been a really, really long time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is just speaking to a more of a, like an overall theme of how good these fields are and how deep they are, because what happens is, and you know, you would know better than me, but it seemed, and it's not just because of Tiger, but it seems back, you know, going back a number of years that, you know, more than half the field, realistically, some of these fields, there was dozens of guys that can win. And now it seems like there's 100 guys that literally could win any week. And that just makes it so difficult. When you're pegging, you play JT, you play Spieth, you're pegging them to win the tournament. You're putting a lot of pressure on that. And I think that's a point to make. It's not to say that I don't like JT, because I do, because his wedges in particular are so strong. But you're right. The balance builds time and time again have been winning out.
Especially given the inconsistent nature of Justin Thomas, if we're talking about him this year, we know he's got the win of the Players, a fantastic win, a certainly career enhancing win, if you will. But it hasn't been good. The putter has looked like he's had the shanks at time. And I got to be honest, you and I over the last 2.5, 3 years, or maybe I forced you, Ben, more than we've talked about it. But I've mentioned how good a putter Spieth is. Well, right now, he's not good from inside of 7 feet, like at all, maybe one of the worst on tour. So both Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth coming in at $11,000 or more, I'm not going to say they're fades for me this week, but it's hard to get. Even with the projected 10% own, it's hard for me to get leverage or want to get leverage there, unless I'm playing on FanDuel, where it is easier to roster them.
Yeah, it's softer over there. And the one nice thing is what you just mentioned, looking, it's early in the week, but they're not super pop where it's like, I got to play 50%. You can get some leverage there, and I'm comfortable doing that, particularly with Justin Thomas, but you feel it at the back end of your rosters. I mean, these other balance builds, the allure is that you have six legitimate cases to make a run. When you build with one of those top end guys, it's a very hierarchical kind of build where you're like, okay, these first two or three guys on my team, most likely they're going to have to carry me. And then I hope these other guys make the cut. So you're kind of playing a couple man down in some regards, but you just, you hope that the strength of them can overcome it.
And then you go on and see that the guys that had a playoff to win this event last year are priced, you know, $700 cheaper in Morikawa's case, $1,000 cheaper in Berger's case. And it makes it even harder to roster these guys. Colin Morikawa, if we think about his skill set, hitting fairways and being really good with his irons. I mean, he is one of the best on tour in both of those, right? Well, this golf course is legitimately rewards golfers that do exactly that. It's going to be hard for me to play Spieth over Morikawa. For me, as you know, I love both of them. I can't roster them in the same lineup. It's very tough unless I want to play Sahith Theegala at about 50% this week, which, of course, we'll get into that maybe in a little bit, a name that I love to throw out there.
Sure.
It just makes it a lot harder. I would rather start with Morikawa or Berger. Pick your poison, if you will, or pick your guy and go from there.
No, and I totally see that, and that money is going to make a big difference. You mentioned Morikawa. What's there to say? The guy is, I mean, he's the best with the irons. It's ridiculous. Got to make some putts, but he's shown those are going to come sporadically. And when they do, he wins. Like, it's as simple as that. He kind of holds steady. You get positive putting, it's over the way he strikes it. So I get it. I do want to ask you though, you know, we brought up some of these guys. Then there is Patrick Reed, who does it differently. You know, he's always ready to play, but what do you make of Reed amongst all the other guys who were more pure ball strikers?
So I mentioned that I was sweating him. He was on my good FanDuel team last week. So I caught a lot of his golf and shot tracker and all that. And I will say the first 2 days were terrible. And then you could tell Saturday morning when he came out and got that little bit of a weather draw, he started to hit fairways. I think he hit below 35% of his fairways in the first 2 days. You look at his weekend stats and it completely flipped. So which Patrick Reed are we going to get then? Are we going to get Saturday, Sunday Patrick Reed, which would line him up for close to a victory here this week? Or are we going to get the still trying to find his game Patrick Reed? I don't know. 10,300 seems like a little bit high to play for that when I know I can just spend $200 more and get Morikawa, who I think is playing really consistent and good right now. Like you said, we got to get a good putting week from him. And if we do, then he wins or at least comes in the top three. I think it's a more sure bet to go with Morikawa here. Although I do like Reed, it's just in a one-off. If I'm playing one lineup on DraftKings this week, it's probably Morikawa.
I'm pretty much in line with that. I'm not going to fault anyone for going to Reed. I may build with Reed. but you're incurring extra risk, and you better make sure that there's a reason, whether it's ownership or leverage of some sort, because I think more often than not, a guy like Morikawa probably outduels him here.
Yeah, I totally agree. Now, if you are one that does like to MME and put in a lot of lineups, well, we've got a perfect tool for you that we've got going on over here on the team. It's the PGA Pro Plays, where we rank our GPP exposures basically from 1 to 60. You saw Justin Su for me a couple of weeks ago be number one on the board there. That didn't really turn out well for me. But it just goes to show you, these aren't our favorite plays of the week. These are what we're doing in terms of our lineups. So check that out as part of our behind-the-scenes Osmo Plus package. Of course, that just starts at $8.95 for golf, and of course, $29.95 for the whole package. And if you want to just get some of our free premium tools, check on what we got going on behind the curtain. Well, for NBA, you're going to get some ownership rankings today. MLB, how about the player rankings? And of course, for PGA, you're going to get the golfer projections. And I know Alex and I have been spending a lot of time going through those, and they've been getting so much better. I don't know if you guys have been seeing Alex's scores. He doesn't really put them out that much, but he has been killing it in the PGA DFS space recently, and just had another great win in the showdown stuff. That's also something we provide in the premium package. So just to finish off, Ben, if you're playing NHL, it is the main slate top stacks today for the free premium content. So got some really good stuff going on out there.
No doubt about it. Yeah. Stanley Cup playoffs is a great time for sports. And
it is. It's awesome.
We say this every week, and it's true with golf. The great thing about golf is it just, you have a major, you win this week. Nobody, I can tell you from experience, I had a really good showing once at Dean and DeLuca, which is this tournament. Like, no one cares about the tournament. The money's all the same. Like, it's nice sure to win the PGA. I'll take the big win at Colonial. That's just fine.
Yep. Totally agree. And interesting enough, this was one of the first tournaments out of the COVID break. So kind of to see it all come for full circle. I think we're going to get fans here this week. So certainly a lot different. Now, as we go into the, say, more balanced build with the first guy in our lineup, or to pair up with Morikawa or Berger, we've got Will Zalatoris and Abe Anser as your first two choices in the 9K range. Anser, it seems like, Ben, everybody is ready for this win. And he shot 7-under on Sunday. Obviously, people are going to see that and be like, okay, it's time. Will Zalatoris also there playing well again. So of these two guys, we can't get both if we're playing Morikawa in the one lineup. So who would be the one you choose? And does it differ in a GPP or a cash setting, say, or in an MME setting? Do you want to get more exposure than one?
So in cash, I think it's pretty obviously Anser. He's just super consistent. He gains off the tee. It's just, that is the Anser there. No pun in time. But in tournaments, it's a little trickier. I don't, because I know this is a question about Will Z and Anser, but Finau also is kind of in that bucket of like a little atypical. It's not the course for him, but I do think there's opportunities to use the length there to an advantage with guys like Will Z, guys like Finau. So I get it. I think Anser is going to be the prudent play, but again, this is where, you know, the tools that everyone here provides is important, because if you use Anser, you're already starting to shape and mold lineups that are going to look pretty generic. It's not to say you can't do that, but keep that in mind. Anser is going to be a very popular play after that Sunday.
No doubt about it. Is this the course to remind me if I'm wrong? Finau came second in a couple of years ago, second or third. Does he have a top five here? I thought I saw that, so, and that kind of surprised me.
I believe it is. I'll tell you in 1 second because I have it right here. But
the Kevin Na year,
from him that, it was in 2019, and he gained 4.5 strokes off the tee that week.
It
just shows, even though this is not a course that's set up for that, you can still pick your spots and carry a lot of the hazards and whatnot. So look out for Finau, maybe to employ a different strategy than most.
Yeah. Morikawa, Finau, they may be total different strategies in how they get it done here, but Finau hasn't missed a cut, and he hasn't came in worse than 34. So as we talk, I think Tony Finau could be a really nice sleeper in this range, because it doesn't get much maybe let me rephrase that. It gets chalkier the less we go. Scotty Scheffler, Corey Connors, Joaquin Niemann all coming in right around 20% owned, and maybe I'm warming up to Corey Connors a little bit, Ben, but Joaquin Niemann is going to be the first name I would say a big fade for me. We have a lot of middling 30-place finishes. We've got back-to-back 30th-place finishes here, 30th last week, the PGA. Now, we went into Sunday a little bit better than that and caught a bad weather break on Sunday afternoon. You throwing that out, or are you going to join me in the fade camp this week?
So I don't, it'll be a product of what the field does, and it looks like they like him quite a bit. And I'm a big Niemann guy. He's been way more consistent. I just don't love this course. He clearly, I mean, he's starting to putt much better, and that's helping. But his around the green game is not good. And Colonial, you're going to need to do that. So it's not like I'm super opposed to the play, but more likely when I'm picturing my lineups, it may be a dead zone because I like a couple, you know, we talked about a lot of guys above him, and there's certainly plenty of value. So I just don't know exactly. I'm not going to start with him. And it's a weird second man in a lot of circumstances.
It is. Scottie Scheffler is a guy, I have a note to tell you that he's just not good in windy conditions. Again, three pretty good rounds at the PGA, and Saturday just got eaten up, and Friday, the Friday afternoon, just got eaten up by the bad conditions. Now, it doesn't look like we're going to get awful. Of course, we're a little still far out to be looking at Thursday, but if it is calm, I mean, Scottie Scheffler is okay this week, right? I mean, off the tee, been one of the most consistent all year and gets it done with both the accuracy and the distance.
Yeah. I mean, again, these guys, we're still, even though this isn't a major level field, these guys are world-class players. And even if they don't perfectly,
just so deep right now. It really is.
It's nuts. And it just shows that course fit is important. It's always going to be important. But when these guys bring their A game, you know, if you're bombing it at a tight tree layout, well, you could still put it in the fairway. And if you're doing that, then you're really set up because you've got short wedges from the middle and maybe it is lift clean in place. They've been getting a lot of rain as Chad pointed out. So things to keep in mind. I have no problem with that. I think course fit becomes more important as we work down.
And somebody in the chat said Zalatoris is strokes gained a spaz. It's has been video game level. It really has been so good. What? Is he as good as Colin Morikawa? Like, are we getting to that level?
It just seems that, I don't know what it is, but it seems like every iteration of like the next guys up are even more fine tuned when they get there. Like, crazy. You know, the Hovland, Morikawa, Scheffler, Wolf, who knows, but these guys just come out and tee to green there. It's not like, oh, they can compete. They just surpass everybody else to start. Now, I don't know if they can sustain it, but my God, him and Morikawa and Corey Connors have just been ungodly with the irons for a very long time.
Sure have. And a guy that last week looked like he was starting to find it, but super erratic. So I don't know if we can go there given his price. But I will say, Ben, Gary Woodland was also on that team that I mentioned. So I followed him quite a bit. And when he was in the fairway and when he was hitting from 180 to 220, he looked really, really good. It's Gary Woodland. But the price bump this week, 5% owned, that has to excite you when you're, say, if you're MMEing, but for one lineup, it's just, he's getting squeezed out for me. I would much rather go up to Zalatoris or Answer here.
Yeah, I'm probably in that same boat. I have no problem with Woodland. I do think, I'm going to talk about Luke List later, but Woodland's another guy that, counterintuitive, he actually benefits from a tight, shorter track, even though he's a longer hitter, because it forces him in spots to kind of club down. And when he is in the fairway, as you mentioned, it's deadly. So I get it. I just don't know exactly what to make. He's found some resurgence. The strokes gain data looks good. Again, no man's land pricing, though. I'm not going to start with Woodland. Maybe, you know, it's not like you can't put him as your second man in, but I just don't love the feel of that. So I'll have exposure. I just don't know if I can even get over, though.
Yeah, and I think Jack just brought up Kevin Streelman, who had a great showing last week until 17 and 18. I still think he ended up in the top 10, if I'm not mistaken, so pretty good week. I do have a couple more guys in the 9K range. Before we get to Streelman, though, I want to ask you about Sungjae, who had a good week, but no real threat at any point.
No, he was just kind of there. You're going to need more than that this week, obviously, with the weaker field and whatnot. I don't mind
stronger price point for him.
Yeah, stronger price point. It's a fine track. He's won at Honda. I don't know though. At the same time, I think I'd rather save some of the salary because I don't see a huge difference. And you know, if I get a little, but I know I keep saying that there's a range I don't really feel strongly on overall.
Yeah, and I think for the most part, ownership seems to be trending that way. Joseph Kokrak, again, not many people want to play him. Maybe they see him as a little bit overpriced this week. I don't think it's a bad spot for him. Came in third here, that break out of COVID. So if he finds the fairway a lot and gets those irons going, he's kind of transformed his putting. I don't know. I'm not saying he's one of the best putters. No, but he was one of the worst. And now he's kind of right in the middle. And funny enough, Ben, when we get down to 7,900, Emiliano Grillo is kind of trending in that same way. Your guy there, he's ranked only 109th this year. Think about that, up from, I think, in the 200s last year. So maybe that's why we've gotten a little bit more consistent. But we'll hold off on the chalk of Grillo this week. Be interesting to hear your take on what you think is going to happen there. But let's go ahead and go into the 8K range. Talk about Kevin Stroman first, since he was brought up. Kind of a guy that has played better. I faded him through the RBC stretch. And then last week, I mean, he was there all week.
Surprising. Didn't think Kiwa Island would fit Kevin Stroman like I think of Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
Given that maybe there's a Pebble Beach stack, him difference. And Phil.
Good point, Phil, too. I mean, what's going on here?
I probably should have thought of that not on the Tuesday after the event, but
it would be the no Tuesday sense. Morning quarterback by us.
I'm really going to be dropping knowledge here, but why does Kevin Streelman wear sunglasses on the back of his head? Really doesn't. I'm not a fan of that look. You ever notice that? He's got the reverse sunglasses
thing going on. Yeah. I mean, is it just an easier way for him to get them on? Like, you know, you pull them up.
No, I mean, I get it, but I'm not a fan of that. I think this is a better course for Streelman. The tee to green game has been fantastic. He gains off the tee without being long. But you're getting a price bump. You are certainly incurring a little bit. Now, it's a product of a weak field too. So it's not a huge opportunity cost. Kind of cash viable, I'd say. Maybe like answering him are targets more suited for cash though.
Yeah. Now, where do you draw the line of looking at so we could talk about this with Tony Finau at Waste Management, right? Where do you draw the line of like, you would perceive Stroman as to be a good fit here, right? But the results haven't been here. No, you know, one top 20 in the last 5 or 6 years. But we saw what happens when we think there's a good fit, like at Tony Finau, Waste Management. Guy almost wins after missing the cut like the last 5 years.
Yeah, sample size is a weird thing when you're talking about something that's held annually like that. You know, you only get one shot and your career can span. You think how different a player can be in 4 or 5 years or even 2 years. Like some of the data is probably bad. Now, there's also another side to this. You could speak to this more than me. There are just some courses that for whatever reason don't suit your eye and you're never going to like playing there. Maybe that's
plenty of them for me. For
yeah. Sure. I mean,
any Peter Dye golf course. Yeah. Any Peter Dye golf course for me.
So, you know, maybe there's something to that with some of these guys, but I do think when I look at Streelman, the elements are there for him to attack at Colonial. There's nothing I see that would cause serious problems. It seems like he doesn't like the greens, but again, that stuff is pretty fluky. So I'm not going to read too much into it.
Yeah, just want to get your pin in there. Okay, a couple of other guys. Justin Rose, well, he's kind of in that Gary Woodland erratic boat. A lot of birdies last week. I think the winning millionaire maker in the 4,400, if I'm not mistaken, had him in it. I was sweating with my buddy Sammy Noel, Matt Smith. Again, the guy is just millionaire maker goat. The guy almost won it again. He's crazy. But regardless, Justin Rose there again, maybe a little overpriced for a defending champ. But can you get behind him as erratic as he is right now?
It's tricky. When you talk about erratic players, there's always upside. And when you can putt like exactly. Justin Rose, yep. I get it. I just worry that he is getting quickly into a bucket. Let's just take a snapshot. Since August of 2020, we've got Justin Rose. He came in ninth at the PGA Championship in 2020. Awful, pretty much everywhere, no top tens. Comes in seventh at the Masters, misses a cut at Valspar, eighth at the PGA. So he's had three top tens in majors, and he has zero top tens anywhere else.
Big game hunting Justin Rose is what you're trying to tell me.
It's just hard to, you know, this is the problem I struggle with Brooks. You look at the data, and there's no reason to play Justin Rose. But he obviously has it. He gained 11 and a half strokes putting last week, though. So
Nine over the weekend.
I think I'm going to let other people maybe chase that. Could burn you, but that's a lot of putting.
And it's a ton of putting. Maybe he likes, you know, coming back as a defending champion. But like you said, kind of turning into a big game hunter. And that's okay. Same with Brooks. I don't really mind it, you know. Just I'd like to see you show up when you should show up in other places, and they just aren't right now. So for me, that's fine. I'll just line them up at Torrey in the same lineup, and that's fine. Maybe just play them in the same lineup all the time in majors and see what we get. A couple of guys that we don't want to play in majors right now. Sergio Garcia is one of them. We'll get to him in a minute here. But before we do, a couple more guys in the 8K range. I want to talk about Matt Wallace. We talked a little bit about Ryder Cup. Matt Wallace sits right around the automatic qualification, and he's had a pretty good year, Ben. So Matt Wallace going to get you to buy in at less than 10% on this week.
Yeah, so the ownership, I think, is attractive. The price seems reasonable. It's been a tough guy. We've talked about him at times where the game was lost. Then he pops, you know, at Valero, RBC, or yeah, Heritage was good. Wells Fargo was good. He was fine last week, made the cut. Tee to green looks good. I have no problem with it. I mean, it's an erratic player, but mid eights in a field like this, what's not to like, honestly? He should be part of the player pool.
He should. And like I said, mentioning about Matt Wallace, I'm trying to give you his exact standing here. Maybe he's, hold on, sorry.
I know that sound. I do that all the time. I know that exact sound.
Now, what did he give up? Maybe I'm wrong. And maybe he gave up like his European Tour membership and is just trying to make it over here, because I don't see him anywhere on this.
He has been playing a lot over. I mean, he's certainly been playing a little in Europe, but maybe he's not in like Race to Dubai or whatever. I don't know exactly how that works.
Well, if anyone in our chat does know, you know, let us know. Or maybe I'm just looking at a old standings. I don't think though, this looks like the current standings, but maybe Europe isn't updated because I see Danny Willett second. So I don't know about all that. Anyways, maybe somebody that knows a little bit more can let us know as we move on from the Matt Wallace talk to talk about the Cameron Tringale chat. Now, we've been fading him forever. So did I take a little bit of homus and a little bit of laughter when he went, I don't even know what how to say this type of bogey for Cameron Tringale, and then packed it up with a quad. It was 13 over in two holes. It was great for faders. I'm not going to lie to you. It was the hardest I laughed, I think, all week. But this week, is he in play? Because outside of those two holes, he was a couple under par.
Yeah, weird situation. I don't know. Cam Tringale is a guy that it's not that I didn't like his game. He'd been playing great all year. It was just he was so popular for a while there.
All the time.
Maybe that, you know, people are pretty quick to abandon ship in the PGA golf world. So I have more interest this week. I think this is a fine track for him, and the results have been fantastic. He never wins, of course, but you don't need him to win. So I'll look ownership dependent. But again, these are the type of plays, you know, Brian Harman's going to make a lot of sense to a lot of people. So yeah, if I can get leverage and maybe a little sneaky, why not?
Let's talk about Harman. Thanks for the lead in there. Right now, and these are all early, and Alex, he'll run them early on Tuesday morning for me for us to talk about on the show. And then, of course, he'll rerun them on Wednesday when things all come in and things settle out a little bit. But Brian Harman is one of those early ones that could be the highest owned golfer on the slate. Now, last week, I'll tell you, he missed the cut on the number, Ben, and when he was coming down the 18th hole, the cut was at like plus four, and he was at plus five. So I think he played for a birdie and ended up with a bogey. Had he had made par, he would have made the cut. Where are you with, had he made the weekend last weekend and comes in like 30th or 40th? Does it change your mind about playing a 25%+ owned Harman this week? Or was it always going to be a fade, or was it always going to be a buy?
So in general, like when guys miss the cut on the number, I tend to be more prone to play them just because you talked about this with Patrick Reed. Like Patrick Reed almost missed the cut. And then, you know, if you just look at the results of where he finished, you're like, oh, great week. It's really high variance around that cut line. So Brian Harman could have made it and then shot 65 like answer, and we'd be talking about even bigger chalk. People are more willing to forgive it because it looks like he's going to be very popular. If he's this popular, and I don't think he will be, I will come in under, but I get it. He fits the track. He's an elite putter. He's not a long hitter. It has every element of what you want, but Brian Harman being the highest owned player on the slate is not something I would get behind.
Yeah, two top 10s and no finish worse than 31st here. I like you get it. But 30%? No, I'll play him in my cash lineups. Hope for that top 30, but nothing better. Throw him in with answer. Hope they both come in 25th. I'll win my 50-50s, and I'll try and get the leverage elsewhere. It's just kind of how I'm going to take it. I do like Brian Harman. He's helped me win some big time money in the past. But this week, 30%, that's just a tough pill for me to swallow, even with the course history. So, all right, let's go on to some values and deep dives. This we got about 15 or 20 minutes as we've got the NHL strategy show. It is, as you mentioned, Stanley Cup playoffs. There is no better hockey than playoff hockey. In fact, I started watching again. Strategy show going to be coming up right after us at 2 o'clock at the top of the hour. So in our time, we still got plenty of time here, though, to go over some of these other plays. And of course, if we missed any plays up above, go ahead and ask. Like, if you want to chat about Kevin Na, sure. He seems out of form, but only 5% owned, so probably going to have him in a couple of lineups myself. Ben, anyone else I missed? Charlie Hoffman. I see his name written down there before I go into the deep dives and values.
Yeah, I mean, there's always Phil.
The PGA champion, Phil Mickelson.
Don't play Phil. Why is Phil playing? Usti took mercy on us and withdrew, thank God.
Thank you, Louis.
No, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of names here. It's, 120-man field. If we missed anyone, that is one of the many reasons to get in Slack. Tomorrow night, live before lock as well. We got many, many ways to get you the info you need, but I think we've covered the basics.
Yeah, Billy Horschel, I will say, I do short-form videos here for us, top fives, fade sleepers. And Horschel's in one of those sleepers. I do think it's a pretty good course, and I hate to bring up this Ryder Cup because it's way too narrative-based for us to even talk about, and it's likely the players aren't thinking about it much. However, with a guy like Billy Horschel, he's right on the cusp of the automatic qualification. I think he sits like 12th or 13th, reigning match play champion, which is exactly what Ryder Cup is. I think if he puts in another win, Ben, he could be considered for the team, or maybe even should be, as weird as that sounds.
That does sound – this is going to be a motley crew because people are talking about Phil being on the team.
How can you have a team with Bryson and Brooks on it right now? Not to go back to them, but how can you have a team group that needs to be in good chemistry and have
– Maybe they'll take Ricky for the chemistry, my man, showing some life with the putter.
Finally. It went back to the old putter, by the way. Yeah. That's why.
Needed. Listen, Billy Ho's had a fantastic year, so there's no doubt about it. Can get it done. I prefer him more on Bermuda, but he's shown he can do it anywhere. You mentioned the match play. A lot of names, and this is a tournament. If you survive the big names up top, there's 80 guys in this field that can win. There is a deep, deep pool of players that know what they're doing here, despite it not being a super strong field.
Yeah, like you said, I think I've written down in the 7K, 6K range, well over 25 golfers for us to chat about. So if one of these 25 golfers, of course, helps you win big here, the Charles Schwab Challenge here this week, Ben and I and the rest of the Osmo team, we want to hear about it. Best way to do that, send us a tweet, of course, or send it to the Osmo Hall of Fame Twitter account where we send out a bunch of the winning screenshots from around the Osmo Plus community. A really fun thing to do. And listen, if I have a bad week, the only thing that's going to make it better is hearing some of my friends and fans win. So please let us know when we do. And last week for me, Ben, I had 47% Sam Burns, so I needed to draft off of other people. And that's just how it goes sometimes when you take a big stand, if you will. Now, any big stands before we jump right into the values and deep dives that you want to bring up here, or should we just talk about Emiliano Grillo first?
I guess that's both, because I am in on Grillo to we're going to find out tomorrow night, but to certainly an extreme degree this week. I know he's going to be popular, but everything is trending in the right direction. And it's scary in a high variance sport like golf, because sometimes you just don't have it and you only get 36 holes to show that you can get through. I feel very confident, though. You mentioned Grillo's gained in 3 of 4 with the putter. He's found something there, and the ball striking has been fantastic. So I don't know what else to say. He fits every criteria that I would want this week. And despite being popular, I am definitely buying in on Grillo.
You had a great tweet there on Grillo after he slid through the line. How did he get through? Did he make a good putt? Speaking of his putting, I think it was a big putt on his 36th hole, right?
It was. I flicked on, of all places, and I've been there needing big putts, I flicked on ESPN and Grillo is just there on the TV. And I normally, that doesn't end well, but he buried it. Good for him. I didn't really need it, but which is kind of annoying because.
Oh, he was that brought him to 4?
No, he needed it. I just didn't really, him much. And where I did, my teams were dead. So I've had some big spots where I needed him to make that exact putt and he hasn't, but you know what? He's turned a corner with that putter. Wow. And that is a catalyst for really good things for him.
that's kind of the point I wanted to bring up about that instance. Now, does that mean he's going to go out and win this week and that putter is going to help him win? Well, maybe, but it at least shows that he's got the ability to step up. You and I last year, if he needed a 10-footer to make the cut, he would be one of the last three people we'd pick to hit that putt for us. So just the fact that he stepped up and made it, again, like you said, there may be variance in there, but he's obviously found something. So even though he's high-owned, I'm turning more into playing him or at least fading him less than, you know, I right now I'm projecting at 15% for me. It's trending a little bit higher though in terms of my allocation. So a couple of other guys in this range of Snedeker and Mitchell, they teamed up there at the Zurich. And since then they've been basically the same price every single week they've played. Two completely different players, but maybe two players that could get it done different ways here. Similar to Tony Finau and Colin Morikawa, obviously not as good, but certainly what guys that can get it done differently.
Well said. You know, you can be aggressive in spots and Keith Mitchell a lot. I mean, again, do I think there's some noise in this? Yes, but Keith Mitchell won at Honda. Like Honda is not a Keith Mitchell course in my mind. So maybe there's something too that he's part of this contingent that benefits from reining him in because he's such a wild man out there and this track could do that. Now, Sneds is the opposite. You mentioned he's going to have to gain 5, 6, 8 strokes with the putter, but he does that a lot. So I get it. Just got to worry about Sneds when he doesn't have it off the tee. It can go really bad really quickly.
Sure can. Moving down the board a little bit, got some chalky guys like Chris Kirk, who was playing great, defending champion, now going to be chalky. I don't think I'm going to play either of these next two guys in my main lineup, but Lee Westwood is also right there in like a quarter of the ownership. Price has come down, so I'm more interested in Westwood than I am Kirk this week.
Yeah, so Chris Kirk's an interesting one. Actually, me and Josh put out our contenders video, and he's in there because I think his betting number is fantastic. I don't know if I love it on the DFS side. Again, he does everything you want here, and that is why he is a former winner. There's no doubt. But you've got Siwoo, you've got Westwood, Cam Davis. Grace is playing much better. He hung around.
For the most part, yeah.
There are names. Peter Uihlein, who I love, Peter Uihlein in life. Got to make his putts, of course, and survive off the tee. But there's a lot of names outside of a guy like Chris Kirk this week.
I actually think that this tournament has a lot to do with why Peter Uihlein still gets in some events. I mean, given 14th and 13th, his two best
he
finishes.
He loves this tournament.
He really does. And Benny's playing pretty good. So he was on my list to talk about next. 7,500, probably a tough price tag, given that he's paired with, like you said, Grace. Sergio Garcia is at 7,500. Crazy. Cam Davis, 7,500. I like all three of those guys over Chris Kirk. Let's put it that way. Or all four, I should say.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got a lot of options here. And even Sergio, who's just been god-awful in majors, and he's been pretty bad all around lately. If you want to go with the off-the-tee narrative, though, he's another guy that can really do damage with his driving. So you got to make your putts. You got to do some things. But with the chalk around there and then HV3, who's right below them, there's a lot to like there. You know, he's a runner-up at Heritage, as was Griot. HV3, I think, is primed for a very solid week.
Yeah, one more thing on Garcia, you know, the fact that he, held the first round lead or close to it at the Byron Nelson. I don't think form is that far out. I don't think he'll play good in a major ever again. Maybe, I don't know. It feels like he turned in those magic beans to win at Augusta. I mean, it's been terrible since then. So
worth it.
But at 75, it totally is, by the way. Totally is. If you asked him right now, hey, Sergio, take your green jacket and 50 mil from the PGL and never play in a major again, he'd probably say yes. That's just my guess on Sergio here. I could be wrong. In any case, though, I think he's okay this week at 7,500. And and now moving down the board, 7,400, you mentioned a guy, Varner. Sorry, yep, thank you. Harold Varner, definitely like him over Vijegas. And Varner has certainly been coming on more of late. We talk a lot about him struggling in wind, but even last week, he was able to get through in tough conditions.
Yeah. I mean, again, there's some things to take away. Even though Kiawah Island and this have nothing to do with each other in a lot of aspects, there are some things to take away. And again, when you build different themed where you're leaning off the tee, you're leaning. You can also build not with skill set. You can build guys that are built to handle wind. Or if you think it's lift clean in place, how does that benefit showdown? There's a lot of narratives in golf that you can build four or five or even six players on the same team that way. So when you get to these lower 7K ranges, this is where that stuff comes into play.
Now, he didn't pay out his own bet that he said we should have bet, only really due to one bad round. It's Joel Damon. He said he loved himself for a top 20 last week. He came in 55th, but he hung around for the most part around that number. The leaderboard was really compact. I mean, if you shot three over on Sunday and were even coming in, you went from a T18 to this T50 range. So take that, of course, with a grain of salt. But I think good fit here. He seems to putt well here. And his irons have been very good lately.
I mean, he's lost in 8 of 9 with the putter. We can't see Corrales, obviously, gain there. We don't have stats.
Yep.
The tee to green game has been fantastic in the last two. So it's just, can he flip a putter? Good price, not getting a ton of buzz out there. Joel Damon makes a lot of sense. You're not going to sniff your cash lineup, but he's someone, as a tournament play, makes certainly a worthwhile target at 7,400.
Yeah, also in this range, and I got to be honest, I don't really know what to do. I'm indifferent from all of these next four guys, and I have question marks on every single one of them because I don't know what to do. Patton Kizzire, Scott Stallings, Russell Knox, and Matthew Neesmith. I hate to bucket all those guys together because they're not one of them is really alike from the other. Do any of those four intrigue you, and are you playing any?
I don't want to say I'm just going to cancel all of them because that's probably a little aggressive and I may need shares, but no, none of them really interest me a ton. Let me step back.
Yeah.
Who's the fourth
Patton, name on that? Yeah. Patton Kizzire. You probably got it. Russell Knox, Scott Stallings.
Yeah. And Neesmith.
Yeah.
I think you can look to some of these guys in a little capacity, but overall, I don't see a ton there. You've got CT Pan is also there. Taylor Gooch is also there.
Gooch is the one that I would pick personally.
I think I would too. So it's hard to get shares of a range. I don't know how much I'll even need. And I have guys that I have over the four that you mentioned.
Yeah, Knox, I guess the case for him is the four top 25s in the last five tries here, but the missed cut coming out of COVID. Granted, he's had three straight made cuts and four top 25s here. I guess that's the case for him. But it sounds like, Ben, you would rather play somebody that's a little bit cheaper, it seems like, over Russell.
I think so. And it just kind of goes back to the theme of this show where if you're going to pay for Morikawa or JT or Speed, like, you need to save some money. And to me, the low sevens and the high sixes kind of interchangeable in a lot of situations. So I'll try to take the savings when I can.
For sure. Kevin Kisner, my note on him is, what has happened here? What's going on? And then same price, man, Doug Kim, Jesus.
Well, that's your account. I don't know what I'll take Kisner.
Chased this so much, Ben, and maybe you have with Kisner too.
Yeah, I've been chasing it more in the betting market than the DFS market, because I do think miscut equity was pretty easily identifiable, but I still believe the upside was there. I'm not sure. And now Kisner's another winner, of here, this. Yeah. I don't know if that's the same game, though, at this point. He's really shown nothing. I mean, the putter has been okay, but for Kevin Kisner, it's got to be more than okay. Great track for him. Not good form at all, though.
No, and I think I'd rather just go elsewhere. I don't think it would be Doug Kim. I think it would be Taylor Gooch. In fact, it might even be Doc Redman, who has been inconsistent still, three of his last six cuts. But in those three that he's made, we had the top 10. We had another one where he was in the top 40, but had a lot of DFS points. So Doc Redman seems like a decent course for him. Certainly revolves around or likes to favor accuracy over distance off the tee.
Yeah. I think you're going to stick with the themes here, and someone like Redman, it's pretty aggressive at times, but these guys, they score so much. You're talking about outscoring your placement, particularly if you don't think they compete. That can make all the difference. You know, you look at the winning lineups, it's not, obviously you want 1 through 6, of course, but it's not like that. You want raw points. And when the guy comes in 32nd, but he has the 11th most, you know, DraftKings points, that's a huge, huge asset. And Doc Redman's the type of player that can do that.
Sure is. And we've got about 4 minutes left. So we'll kind of combine this last range, the 7K range and the 6K range. So I'm going to flow right into those guys. Harry Higgs, actually, I think he's probably still above 7K. What a great finish. big time stuff for him. He gets into the Masters now because of it, gets into PGA Championship next year because of it. And he's a guy that, Ben, for the Masters specifically, likely wasn't going to qualify.
Oh, no. Huge, you know, groundbreaking. You know, Ricky had an opportunity to do that as well and did not get it done. Missed that putt on 18.
No. But
he seemed like he's trending in the right direction. He's got a long time. Yep. But, yeah, absolutely. You know, Higgs and some of these guys down here are coming off big-time catalyst, you know, him in particular. So I get it. He did a lot around the green, and that was unforeseen, and that's my one hesitation.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Adam Hadwin, he's playing better recently. Hasn't missed a cut since 2015. I know they showed him. He was playing with – I forgot who he was playing with in the first two rounds, but they showed him because – whoever he was playing with was playing good. Ended up making the cut, but prior to that, it was three straight missed cuts. Do you think maybe the made cut last week is signs of the right direction, or are we waiting one more week at least?
I think it's a little of both, to be honest. I think it's in the right direction, but I'm not sure you get mega burned if you go elsewhere. He's a great putter. He can get hot. I wish he was like 65. Then I'd really get there, but you've got guys. Fratelli's there, Luke List is there, Poston is, who was inconceivably 61, even though he wasn't good. That was just a weird price last week. So you have a lot of names you're competing with for shares in the upper sixes.
One guy that you'd probably throw out, maybe as we tried to throw out Tony Finau and then found out, you know, he came in second, would be Cameron Champ, and he came in almost dead last week, 15 over for the 2 days. There is no chance you're playing him, right?
No.
Even at 6,900 at this field?
I do think that there's elements that are attractive with that because he can get hot with his putting is now broken. Without that, he needs to be a Bryson clone where he's good off the tee and good with the putter. Good off the tee with nothing else is not going to work. That's not a viable.
6,800, a guy that through two rounds was looking quite good. Even Saturday, 73 wasn't terrible, but the full, the three over 75 on Sunday pushed him down the board, put him back the three over four of the tournament. I'm talking about Richie Werenski, 6,800, a guy that certainly has had a better last 52 weeks than you or I would have expected with a win mixed in there. So 6,800, I don't think it's a bad spot here for Werenski.
Yeah, he's someone at one point, you know, made some waves, and he pops up on the board. He can get out with the irons and whatnot. And now we're starting to get to cheapy, so you can look to some of these Patrick Rogers types, Mac Hughes, Thigala Shank, names we'll discuss more at length tomorrow. But I do want to, before we bounce out of here, just you're the man to talk about with this Thigala guy. What do you make of him?
Well, here's what I like about what we've seen from him is that when he's gone to the Korn Ferry Tour, which obviously is the precursor here, he's made the cut in every single time. And in fact, he's played good. If you look at the four starts, you know, in the March through end of April realm, put up 80 DraftKings points in every single one of those starts, making the cut, one top 10. So what that says to me is that he is coming into his own in professional golf. Can that translate out of the PGA Tour? Well, Ben, I think it's a good spot for him here this week. He's good off the tee. He's good with his putter. Came in 14th at the Safeway. That probably gets him a little bit more status towards that Korn Ferry Tour Finals ranking. We need to see a bit more, but he's at least headed in the right direction and likely gets status with one or two more good starts. Not on the PGA Tour, but at least on Korn Ferry. I like the long-term prospects. This week, I'm okay with him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a guy I'm not too familiar with. I may have some shares. If he masses serious ownership relative to his range, I will probably pivot just because, you know, there's other names in this range.
Sure is. Well, listen, we have got a fantastic month and a half of golf coming up. We've got the Olympics thrown in there and both Open Championships. Plus, we got Torrey Pines out there on the West Coast. For the U.S. Open, our buddy Jordan behind the glass, maybe going to that. So we'll leave you with that. Of course, a great time. The reason why I brought it up, great time to join us on the Osmo Plus side. We have a lot of fun in Slack as well. Ben and I are in there almost every day going through answering questions. So I know we didn't get to the strategy portion, but I'm going to pass off a couple of notes to you guys for the Live Before Lock show for tomorrow at 8 o'clock, that is. So until then, everybody, join us, and we will see you on the other side. Cheers. choo, choo.